Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Imran Khan. Lebanon is in mourning after Beirut suffered its worst street violence in more than a decade. What started as a protest against the judge investigating last year's Beirut port explosion became a gunfight. Could this trigger more chaos in a country already in economic and political ruin? Let's bring in our guests in Beirut, Sami Nadir, Director of the Levant Institute for Strategic Affairs in Doha. Rami Khoury, Director of Global Engagement at the American University of Beirut, and also in Beirut, Jessica Abade, an activist and independent energy policy consultant. Thank you for joining us all. I'd like to begin in Beirut with you, Sami Nadir. On the surface, this looks like Hezbollah and Amal bullying the government and the judiciary into making a change that they want. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it's fair assessment. This is what triggered the reaction. One has to say that the action of the sniper is totally unacceptable. Shooting on demonstrators is totally unacceptable. However, it's Hezbollah and Amal's provoking of the judiciary. It's Amal and Hezbollah trying to block the justice procedures. Who triggered this reaction? Now, we don't know if these clashes were like a genuine reaction of the dwellers or is it something staged. But we will soon know this. If the outcome of all this event will be the suspension of the Judge Bitar for the reason that social peace should be kept, that would mean that we have witnessed a scenery in order to suspend the action of the judge, bearing in mind that this they have been trying everything to block the investigation process. They have been trying political pressure. They have been trying intimidation. They have been trying legal tricks. Recently, they took it to the street. They played on the sectarian feeling, trying to drag the country into a civil war or something close to a civil war in order to block the justice procedure.
Let's bring in Rami Khoury in Doha. Lebanon has the right of free assembly. It has the right of to protest. Yet there were snipers. They shot into the crowd. We don't know who they are. What is going on there? Is this, you know, change by violence?
Well, what's going on is something, unfortunately, that has happened before in Lebanon. People take to the streets, unknown gunmen or unknown people put explosives. The tragedy is that it could be any of two or three or four possible groups or people who might want to do this, to shoot at the demonstrators. Initially the marchers who came into the area. Of course, the march was provocative, going near the Christian majority area, and some of them yelling Shia, Shia. So there was some provocation there, clearly. But that's the whole point of the situation from the Hezbollah Emel side, was to assert themselves, saying we're not going to accept this this investigation the way it's going now. Then people shot at them. So these things happen, unfortunately, regularly, because the country has never figured out a way to adjudicate disputes, political disputes, in a political way. The election system doesn't seem to do it. The judicial system doesn't seem to do it. And therefore, people take to the streets. And now you have an unusual situation where Hezbollah is so powerful and strong militarily and politically that it feels it can lay down red lines and assert itself. And this is one of them. It tried to do that with the UN investigation, right, the international mixed investigation of the Hariri killing, and it wasn't able to because of the international link. So this is unfortunately part of the modern Lebanese political culture, which is a little bit disjointed and slightly dysfunctional, and it's not going to be easily resolved.
Well, let's bring in Jessica Abade here, who is also in Beirut. Jessica, you were a big part of the protests over electricity shortages, over general mismanagement in Lebanon itself. Now you're seeing these protests. Are you worried that protesting has become a very dangerous affair in Lebanon? Is this an escalation, in your opinion?
First, I cannot compare the demonstration that happened yesterday of armed group trying to obstruct justice and accountability to the protest of people demanding basic services and accountability. So there are no similarities in the protest. What we're seeing in terms of the shortage and lack of basic services is that people are no longer mobilizing like they did in October 2019, and that probably portrays how low people are on hoping that change can actually happen. So what we're witnessing is probably that the people who want basic services and better life conditions are not so hopeful that they can have them anymore.
So let me know, how much of this is about Justice Tariq Bitar and how much of this is actually just about Hezbollah wanting to get the outcome that they want?
I mean, this is a very good question. There is a lot about the judge Bitar, because at the end of the day, it's not about the judge, but it's about the case that judge is holding. We're talking here about the Beirut blast, this explosion that is unprecedented in the history, not of Lebanon, but of the humanity. We're talking about a blast that totally destroyed half of the city of Beirut, 200 deaths, 66,000 wounded. And the Lebanese people want to know the truth, want to know the truth about what happened. So the case by itself, it is a very big case, and it's leaving a lot of wounds in the hearts of the Lebanese. This is on one side. On the other side, yes, this is there is accumulating effect that this big event comes to add on many frustration that the Lebanese people are, or part of the Lebanese people, they are holding grudges against Hezbollah, because it's about this Beirut blast, but it's about Lebanese sovereignty. Every day, the Lebanese state is losing one additional attribute of its sovereignty to the advantage of Hezbollah. So the elephant in the room here is Hezbollah, that is today a state inside the state. It's in fact, it's the Lebanese state inside the Hezbollah state. We're talking about a population that is hostage of a military organization that has the upper hand on the executive side, on the military side, on the legislative side, and now they are putting pressure to curb the judiciary to their needs, to their to the way they want it. So they are putting the pressure on this judge in order to get the investigation the way they want it. They even said we need to adjust the course of the investigation. What does it mean to adjust the course of the investigation? That means if justice is not the way I see it, I don't want it. I refuse it. And when we're talking about judges, about justice, we're talking about the very building block of a state, because this is the value upon which you build a society.
So, let me put let me put that very important point to Rami Khoury. Rami, Hezbollah are a state within a state, and they're trying to now change the course of the judiciary. Do you agree, disagree?
I think that's pretty accurate. Hezbollah has grown so strong over the last, almost 40 years because the state was weak. Hezbollah's birth started in the south of Lebanon after the Israelis occupied the south. But the genesis of Hezbollah were Shiite activists in the south who were working for social justice and improving the positions of Shiites who were really like third-class citizens back in the 40s and 50s. So Hezbollah grew because the state was not playing the role it should of treating all its citizens equally, developing all the areas in the country equally, and more importantly, protecting the country from foreign aggression. But Hezbollah grew so strong that it became stronger than the state militarily. And it's not just stronger than the Lebanese state. Hezbollah is the only military group that has forced Israel twice into a ceasefire at the UN Security Council. I mean, it's quite an astounding situation. Its military strength is enormous. And the fact that it's linked to Iran very closely creates big problems. If it was purely a Lebanese institution, which it is, it's a Lebanese institution, but its links are strategic, very, very close with Iran. Many Lebanese who don't like it criticize it because they see it as an appendage of Iranian foreign policy. And Iranian foreign policy has been, in recent years, to have a collection of strategic relationships with groups all around the Middle East, and it has succeeded in doing that. It has this network of non-state actors, as well as some states like the Syrian government, and therefore it can project its power or its interests around the region. And many Lebanese are not comfortable with that. So it's in a very delicate position of being very powerful and being very efficient at what it does. But what one of the things it doesn't do very well is political contestation and compromise. It's not very experienced.
I actually want to bring Jessica on this point. Jessica, when we spoke in October 2019 during those protests, you had very strong words to say about the way Lebanese society and politics was actually set up. You were calling for complete radical change of the confessional system, of the way Lebanese politics is naturally, constitutionally sectarian. Is this one of the reasons you think that Hezbollah are able to maintain such power and such influence?
So it's one reason. The other reason is that they actually are an armed group, and they have, across the years, have grown stronger across all the institutions of the Republic. So we're seeing that they're the dominant party now. In previous years, they used to be not on the forefront of governments, but in the past two, three governments, they've been so much on the forefront. So that's also put them into a different situation with their own constituents as well, because at some point they also have to provide basic services, being on the forefront of governments. They can be held accountable for the shortages in basic services. So that also is also a game changer for them internally as well.
Sami Nader, where is the Lebanese army in all of this? They're the one symbol of Lebanese national unity, and yet there seems to be not strong statements coming out from them, and certainly they're not out in the streets.
Definitely. Today, the army is put under a lot of pressure. However, the army should take its order from the government. And here is the problem, that the government is totally paralyzed, totally powerless in front of Hezbollah behavior, in front of these provocation. Look, for instance, how the president of the Council of the Minister, the prime minister, what was his reaction when the Iranian oil was getting into the country through the border in a total defiance of the Lebanese sovereignty? All what he has to say is that I'm sad of what's happening. So here we are in front of a government that is supposed to give the order to the Lebanese army that is powerless. And in fact, they are totally, they can't counterbalance the strengths of Hezbollah. It's true, the both guests are said accurately that Hezbollah power is growing by the day. Today, he is more powerful than the state. And in fact, no government can face up to him. This is why I think that the only way forward for Lebanon is to have like an independent government to be at a distance from all the regional power, a government that can give the right order to the Lebanese army in order to stop this slide into the unknown. Because really, if these incidents of yesterday show anything, it showed how much fragile is the peace in Lebanon and the situation in Lebanon. And what is at stake, I am saying, it's the corner value upon which the social peace is relying on. Plus, I mean, any blow to the justice today is a blow to the final hope to rescue Lebanon that is plunging in a very severe economic crisis. Because the only way out of the crisis is to have some kind of package and some kind of international aid, and this conditioned by fighting corruption. How you can fight corruption without a
credible justice? Well, Sami, you make a very good point. Actually, I was going to come on to international support. Rami, I'm going to bring you in here. The US has pledged $67 million to the Lebanese army in the wake of this particular crisis. But what Sami is saying is that with a government that's so divided, it actually effectively makes the Lebanese army useless.
Well, I wouldn't say useless, no. The army still plays an important role. And in fact, over the last 10, 15 years, since the Syrians were pushed out of Lebanon by popular rebellion, I mean, they still have influences, but they don't run the country like they used to. The political system has really deteriorated and has been run by an oligarchy of sectarian leaders. And corruption has increased, and all the public services have deteriorated, and that's why we have this terrible situation. And then the central bank was in cahoots with this process too. But the army has been rebuilt, has been, since the Civil War, has played a bigger role internally. They've, in the recent years, they've quickly come out and been deployed whenever there was any sectarian tension or fighting, and they've been doing this more and more, like they did yesterday. They came out quickly. They separated the two fighting groups, whoever the other group was, and they give the citizens a sense that somebody is going to try to work for the well-being of the whole country and not allow the country to slip back into active sectarian warfare. So I think we have to notice that the army has done a better job. Over the years has increased, but it has limits about how far it can go, because it is also has, like all the other institutions of the country, has a balance of sectarian leaders within it and the soldiers. So it can, like in the Civil War, it can fracture along sectarian lines, and that's something that people want to avoid at all costs.
Jessica Abade, once again, both our guests are talking about the fact that the government does need a shake-up, something you've been saying since those October 2019 protests. Those protests, let's be honest, didn't change anything. This protest may well have an impact on the judiciary, but it's a very, very different thing to the thing that you were protesting about, which was change in government. Have you got any hope that something might change soon? Or are you losing hope?
I'm not losing hope. I do have hope now. It's like we're seeing for the first time the judiciary system actually stepping up, at least in an attempt to hold someone accountable, which didn't happen in the past 30 years. It didn't happen since the Civil War. So that's a precedent for Lebanon. I'm hopeful about this and the upcoming elections, because Hezbollah might lose its Christian cover. I'm also hopeful about the generational change. I find that it's too soon to judge those protests. None of the protesters have actually gotten to power. We haven't had any change in the political scene since then. The governments have been unstable, but also have adopted a policy of inaction, which would have disastrous impact on the Lebanese. And maybe that would mobilize them to try to change for the better of Lebanon.
We are running out of time, but I do want to put your point to our guests in Beirut and in Doha. Just very, very quickly, Sami Nadhad, is this a moment of the judiciary really standing up for itself, as Jessica has just said?
I didn't get the question, sorry.
Is this, as Jessica just said, the judiciary standing up for itself and saying, we are?
Actually, what we're witnessing is a kind of awakening of the judges. Because it's not only about the Judge Bitar. Before Judge Bitar, there was a judge, Judge Sawan, who was forced to resign because he did not accept to abide by the rule of the prevailing political forces.
Sorry, Sami, we are running out of time, and I do want to hear from Rami. I do want to hear from Rami on this point as well. Sorry, just running out of time. I'm fascinated to hear from all three of you. Rami, is this a new moment for the Lebanese judiciary?
It's a very important moment for Judge Bitar. Whether he represents a bigger movement in the judiciary or not, we'll have to wait and see. But this is really historic for somebody like him to face up to the pressures against him and try to get him to resign. It's going to be a momentous decision if a decision is made to have him resign and be replaced, or to keep pushing on with his investigation.
I want to thank all our guests, Sami Nader, Rami Khoury, and Jessica Abade. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Calvin Eng, Hamara Chowdhury, Laurent Peter, and Paul Taylor. Sound was mixed by Nanda Kishore, and it was edited by Manish Matai, Lynn Enwin, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. And thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Monday.